Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When I'm putting up pictures of really beautiful food on Instagram, it's not sharing. It's a deliberate act of aggression to make people feel bad about what they're eating. You know, I don't want you, you know, if I put up me, you know, a picture of a beautiful piece of, you know, big wad of caviar and creme fraiche and some steaming hot blinis, okay? I don't want you to be sitting at home eating the same thing. I want you to be sitting at home in some crap-stained boxer shorts eating Cheetos on the couch.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today's show features Seth's conversation with Anthony Bourdain, who takes a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
Special Counsel Robert Mueller has filed the first charges in his investigation of the Trump campaign's potential ties to Russia. And, of course, news that the charges are coming sent President Trump and his allies into an unhinged frenzy over the weekend. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. The Trump White House knew today was going to be a bad news day, so you'd think they would savor any chance to take a break from the chaos and project normalcy. For example, on Friday, Trump engaged in the presidential Halloween tradition of handing out candy to the children of members of the White House press corps. And yet, Trump could not resist turning the innocent task of handing out candy into an opportunity to air his grievances about the media.
I cannot believe the media produced such beautiful children. How the media did this, I don't know. Do you know who they are? Do you know who they are? They're the friendly media. They're the fret. That's the press. Oh, you're going to grow up to be like your parents? Don't answer. That can only get me in trouble, that question. So how does the press treat you? I'll bet you get treated better by the press than anybody in the world, right? Well, congratulations, folks. You did a good job. You did a good job. Here you did a good job. I wouldn't say you did very well here.
That's because you're the president, not one of their children. You never hug me. You make me go to bed early. And when I want ice cream for breakfast, you say no. Also, look at the faces of those kids. And they're all looking at Trump and thinking, you're the reason my daddy drinks. But it actually got worse than that, because as he was handing out the candy, Trump made this comment to some of the children.
Who likes this?
No, that
was... You have no weight problems. That's the good news, right?
You have no weight problems. I can't wait to see how Trump botches the presidential turkey pardon. You're going to live, but the rest of your family dead. They're all dead. And you only have one more year. You're probably not getting a second pardon. So it's stuffing for you, friend, but congratulations on what I hope will be a good year. Did we get the pictures? Can I go now? So Trump's weekend got off to a rough start, and then this morning he woke up to even worse news.
Former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort and his business associate Rick Gates have been indicted by a federal grand jury on a number of felony charges, including money laundering and conspiracy against the United States.
No, I'm no legal expert, but conspiracy against the United States does not sound good. Doesn't leave much room for a plea bargain. What if I just copped a conspiracy against Delaware? You know Delaware was asking for it. Things really could not be worse for Paul Manafort around now. Although, on the bright side...
You have no weight problems. That's the good news, right?
Okay. Bright side. Now, the indictment against Manafort alleges that he laundered millions of dollars and failed to register as an agent of a foreign government. The indictment has all kinds of details about how Manafort allegedly laundered money by purchasing items from high-end stores, including a home entertainment company, a men's clothing store, a landscaper in the Hamptons, and an antique rug store. Wow, he allegedly laundered $1 million through a rug store, and not only that, the rug he bought wasn't even convincing. Trump, of course, could not help but respond to the news today on Twitter in a way that made very clear he is not handling this well. First, he tweeted, sorry, but this is years ago, before Paul Manafort was part of the Trump campaign. But why aren't Crooked Hillary and the Dems the focus? But then 3 minutes later, he added, also, there is no collusion! He is so bad at this. It's like getting pulled over and saying, I wasn't speeding, officer, and also, there's no cocaine in the glove compartment! Don't look there! It's a waste of your time! But maybe there's a perfectly good explanation for all 12 counts against Manafort. I mean, does he sound like a guilty man to you?
So to be clear, Mr. Trump has no financial relationships with any Russian oligarchs.
That's what he said. That's what I said. That's obviously what our position is.
I think I'll probably die in jail.
But that Manafort news isn't the only bombshell today because it was also revealed that Mueller's team arrested a third Trump campaign official, a foreign policy advisor named George Papadopoulos, who, unlike Manafort, has already pled guilty to lying to the FBI. Papadopoulos allegedly met with a professor tied to the Kremlin who promised dirt on Hillary Clinton. According to the indictment, Papadopoulos met the professor for breakfast at a London hotel, where the professor told Papadopoulos the Russians had obtained dirt on then-candidate Clinton. Wow, so it was the professor in the dining room with the emails. The Trump administration is turning into a game of Clue, but since it's Trump, clueless. Apparently, Papadopoulos tried to lie about this interaction to the FBI. Papadopoulos said falsely he learned that information prior to joining the campaign. But in fact, the professor only took interest in Papadopoulos because of his status with the campaign. Of course he did. You think he was interested in you because of your personality? Or maybe it's just fun saying your name in a Russian accent.
Mr. Papadopoulos. Please, let's have breakfast, Mr. Papadopoulos. You can have the Papadopoulos.
Of course, now that Manafort has been charged, Trump and his team are trying to distance themselves from him. But during the campaign, Trump and his aides went out of their way repeatedly to emphasize how important Manafort was to their operations.
Who do you believe will take over the campaign? Will it be Paul Manafort?
Yeah, I think Paul is totally in charge.
Nobody should underestimate how much Paul Manafort did to really help get this campaign to where it is right now.
Paul Manafort has done an amazing job. He's here someplace. Where's Paul? Paul Manafort. Oh, good. You made it.
Oh, good. You made it. Where were you?
I was doing some Russian stuff.
And when none of your defenses work, there's always the option of ignoring the news completely. As other news outlets were going wall-to-wall with coverage of the Manafort indictment, here's what Fox News thought was more important.
All right, this cheeseburger emoji causing a frenzy online. We've been talking about it all morning. Can you see what's wrong with this picture? The cheese is underneath the hamburger. Who does that?
Unless the answer is Paul Manafort, who cares? You know, Fox News, if you really want to talk about emojis, you can at least focus on the ones that are relevant to the Trump White House. Of course, Fox News was just following the playbook they and the Trump team had adhered to all weekend after the news of the pending criminal charges came down on Friday. Trump went on a Twitter rant in which he tried to distract from the news and lash out at everyone from James Comey to the Democrats to Hillary Clinton.
President Trump released a torrent of tweets this weekend, his frustration building to an all-caps crescendo. Never seen such Republican anger and unity as I have concerning the lack of investigation on Clinton-made fake dossier. The uranium-to-Russia deal, the 33,000-plus deleted emails, the Comey fix, and so much more. Instead, they look at phony Trump-Russia collusion, which doesn't exist. The Dems are using this terrible and bad for our country witch hunt for evil politics, but the Republicans are now fighting back like never before. There is so much guilt by Democrats, Clinton, and now the facts are pouring out. Do something.
Do something? He sounds like a supervillain barking orders at his henchmen after James Bond escapes. He's getting away, do something. But his henchmen are yelling back, we can't, we're all under federal investigation. But the most disturbing thing about the right-wing reaction to the Mueller news this weekend was their frothing obsession with Hillary Clinton. The right has manufactured a series of fake Clinton scandals to try to muddy the waters and distract from the very real Russia investigation. For example, they've dredged up an old uranium deal from 2010 that was approved by 9 different agencies and had nothing to do with Hillary Clinton, to try to claim she was the one who colluded with Russia. And Trump himself immediately picked up on that absurd talking point.
Well, I think the uranium sale to Russia and the way it was done, so underhanded, with tremendous amounts of money being passed, I actually think that's Watergate modern age.
You know what? From now on, I think you should only get to talk about uranium deals if you can actually explain what uranium is. Mr. President?
You know what uranium is, right? It's a thing called nuclear weapons and other things. Like, lots of things are done with uranium, including some bad things.
Trump always sounds like a high schooler who forgot to study for the quiz.
Oxygen, I don't have to tell you, oxygen does good things, and then you have uranium, bad things. And tungsten, don't get me started on tungsten. It's where the tongue comes from.
We're entering a new and intense phase of the Mueller investigation, and Trump and his allies are doing everything they can to stop or discredit it. On the one hand, Trump claims his team is doing some really good things, but in reality, it looks like they were up to
some bad things.
This has been A Closer Look. Our guest tonight is a chef, best-selling author, and host of the Emmy and Peabody Award-winning series Anthony Bourdain, Parts Unknown. New episodes air Sunday nights on CNN. Please welcome back to the show Anthony Bourdain, everyone. How are you?
Good.
It's always nice to see you. Your show is very unlike, there are a lot of travel shows. There's a lot of shows where people eat food on the road. Yours is very different because you are not, you rarely talk with people who are selling anything. You're not dealing with tourist agencies. But it must be difficult to find your way to the places that tour guides don't want to show you.
Well, we try really hard to get that right. We've learned a lot of lessons, some of them painfully over the years. Your local contacts on the ground, you know, they have to know the area. They have to have a sense of humor. They have to know what you're not looking for. You know, we're not looking to do top 10 best list or a fair and comprehensive overview. But, some of the places that we go, you have a bad fixer, you're really in trouble. You know, we learned, like in Sicily, we had a problematic fixer once, and, you know, he promised, I'm going to take you to the best pizzeria in all Sicily, which, by the way, my brother owns, you know.
So yeah.
Not what we're looking for.
Right, exactly. How quickly do you know you have a dud fixer?
Pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, I think we did, I'm not going to say which country. We went to one country with a New Yorker who claimed to have deep roots in this area, had spent, you know, many years there, he said. And we showed up with him, and all the locals immediately, like, they're talking to me and saying, I could hear them saying in Spanish, who is this jerk?
You have a, I don't know if it was the fixer's fault, if it was your fault, if this is just a core fault of the governments that are mad at you. You have run afoul of some foreign governments.
I have. The worst case scenario is when the government sort of tries to infiltrate your local crew and make things prettier than they are.
I see.
So, you know, official bodies enter and, you know, we're shooting with a butcher in rural Romania. You know, we like to do typical things with typical people. And we had a local butcher in a rural area of Romania set to go with his family. Apparently, the government found out they arrived the night before, unbeknownst to us. It's like, you know, your house is not attractive enough. We move you to nicer house. dress your children, you know, an 8-year-old and his 9-year-old sister, dress them in traditional garb, make them dance for the Americans. You know? So it's just this painfully false, awkward thing, these terrified children dancing, yeah. Like little
I remember
little
that
humble
episode
figurines.
And thinking, I don't know if girls dance at Romanian butchers, but...
Do not shoot stray dogs, you know. Do not shoot gypsy. Only shoot, you know, nice new Hilton Hotel, Cadillac.
That's good. When you said do not shoot stray dogs, I thought a different thing.
No,
I forgot
okay.
You have cameras. I forgot you have cameras. I was like, I don't know. That seems pretty forward thinking of the Romanian government.
A big, big, big scandal. With a, you know, of course, by trying to manipulate reality, you know, it ended up being a very tragically funny show. And I was all over the newspapers in Romania as a KGB agent, Mossad agent, and CIA agent, all at the same time. It's apparently,
so probably not going back.
I never say never.
Yeah, exactly. If you're a Mossad agent, you'll find your way back in. So I also want to ask, you went to Puerto Rico.
Yes.
And you went before the hurricane.
Yes.
But you had a sense of the trouble they were in even before this natural disaster.
They were already in a, you know, look, this is a beautiful place. You know, Puerto Rican culture was so much of, you know, New York culture, American culture when I grew up. If you heard Spanish language in New York, it was a chance I was Puerto Rican. And yet they were stuck and still are stuck, even before the hurricane, in this bizarre financial limbo where they found themselves so hideously in debt to these predatory hedge funds and foreign banks that they are now administered by a tiny, unelected group of people appointed by hedge funds and banks who are free to say, you know, we're taking the money from this school, that pension fund, you don't really need that public transportation, those hospitals closed, because they're entitled by law to take whatever money they want, in whatever way they want, is, you know, they get paid first before anybody else. So it's this, they can't vote for president. They really have no power over their own destiny. And it's and this was before this terrible event.
It's wonderful to even see, get a sense of it, because I feel like, unfortunately, we tune into a story like that after a hurricane, and then we don't really understand that these problems were deeply seated, and the hurricane only magnified what was a real problem.
If nothing else, you know, I think what I'm proud of this show, because it shows you, you know, when something terrible happens to a place, you know, this is who we're talking about. You know,
yeah.
these are the people that it's happening to.
The New York Times reported your friend, Chef Jose Andres.
Hero.
He served more people. He went down to Puerto Rico. He served more people than any aid agency.
Yeah, Jose Andres, a chef from Washington, D.C., notable for being sued by Donald Trump.
Yeah.
among his other many great accomplishments. went down to Puerto Rico, and without any funding, nothing, just he went first and just said, I'm going to start feeding people, as many people as I can, and working with World Central Kitchen, a group who he's been heavily involved with for a long time in Haiti and elsewhere. He's fed, almost 3 million people.
Yeah.
Far more hot meals than FEMA was able to provide. The Salvation Army at one point were asking him for food. It's a testament to what individual people can do, what chefs can do. And as always, he's an inspiration.
You speak about what chefs can do, and it does seem to me that there's unique qualities that make a great chef. And kitchens are a place where you have to move fast, and you have to make quick decisions, which probably come in very helpful in times of crisis. In this now, this cloud of sexual harassment, that's all these stories that are coming out, you spoke and apologized to lending to this meathead culture that sort of prevailed in kitchens back when you started. What do you mean by that? What was the meathead culture?
I came up in a very old European-based system based on the military called the brigade system, and it was largely male. It was, frankly, pretty brutal and oppressive. It was very, very, very difficult. I was proud of making it 30 years in that system. And when I wrote about it, I tended to, you know, glorify. I was proud of having
this
been
is your,
tough enough.
Right in Kitchen Confidential.
And, you know, I wrote a book that, you know, I stand by, and that it was an honest representation of what I saw, what I went through, what I, you know, the voices I heard and my own voice at the time. But I gave, you know, people would come up to me after this book at readings. I knew I had a problem within a couple of years because people would come up to me, fans, and they'd high-five me with one hand and slide me a packet of cocaine with the other. And I'm like, dude, did you not read the book? Drugs did not work out so great for me.
Yeah.
So I think in some ways I kind of, you know, provided unwitting or you know, I provide a validation for a kind of a meathead mentality, a bro, you know, sort of meathead bro culture that, you know, has not been good, particularly for women. And, I don't want to think I lowered the level of discourse, but I don't think I helped it.
Well, I think it's interesting because, you know, we've seen it in politics and we've certainly seen it in the entertainment industry. And we sometimes forget that this kind of stuff is happening across all industries. Specific to the food industry, do you think there's a chance that that culture will change? Do you think?
I think it's going to have to change. I think it's a lot to ask hearts and minds of, you know, fully grown men who've come up in this system, frankly, very oppressive system. Might be too late, but they're going to have to, whether they like it or not, whether their hearts and attitudes have changed or not, they're going to have to contend with this. They're going to have to think about what is things that they see. You're going to have to, you know, account for yourself. You know, what did I do when at that important moment? You know, what did I say? Who? What kind of a person was I? You're going to have to take responsibility for what you see, not just what you take part in.
Well, I think it's great that you're speaking out about it. I really appreciate it. And I'm just such a fan of the show. And thanks so much for being here. It's always such a pleasure to see you.
Thank you.
Anthony Bourdain, everybody. Anthony Bourdain, Parts Unknown, airs Sunday nights on CNN.
Hey, everybody. This is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Anthony Bourdain. So we were talking about your show on CNN. You're also an executive producer of this documentary called Wasted about food waste. And what was super interesting about it is you talk about how foods that we used to consider or chefs used to consider waste are now super popular. Has that change kind of delighted you?
Yeah. I mean, the sheer irony and absurdity of the fact that, you know, food that desperately poor people used to have to eat, like, you know, pig's feet and, you know, sheep guts and, cheeks and jowls. You kind of have to go out to some hipster restaurant in Brooklyn and pay $32.95 for. I kind of like that.
Yeah. We were talking earlier about how hipsters have really changed. They've opened up maybe people's food palates.
Yeah, I mean, as reluctant and as curmudgeonly as I might feel, I think hipsters have been a positive thing for the restaurant business and for food culture in general. I mean, you have people with ironic mustaches, you know, trying to preserve original food ways and, you know, raising heritage pigs and making artisanal cheese. And, if they play the ukulele with it, that's okay.
That's right. Are you surprised? I mean, when you talk about food culture, how big of a piece of pop culture food culture is now? I mean, there are so many TV shows. There's so many movies. There's so many documentaries. Has it surprised you?
It's bigger than porn. it really is.
Well, it is porn.
A lot like porn.
Oh, explain that. Interesting.
Well, you know, if you're making food porn, the shot progression is exactly the same, right? You open with like a wide shot, you know, an establishing shot, the exterior suburban home, pizza boy rolls up in medium shot, move in a close, cut to money. It's exactly the same.
That's super interesting. Also on social media, people Instagram their food constantly.
Yes.
You have a complicated relationship with this.
I've decided to be honest about it. When I'm putting up pictures of really beautiful food on Instagram, it's not sharing. It's a deliberate act of aggression to make people feel bad about what they're eating. You know, I don't want you, you know, if I put up me, you know, a picture of a beautiful piece of, big wad of caviar and creme fraiche and some steaming hot blinis, okay? I don't want you to be sitting at home eating the same thing. I want you to be sitting at home in some crap-stained boxer shorts eating Cheetos on the couch.
When you go out to a restaurant, whether or not you're Instagramming your meal, are chefs nervous to serve you because you know food so well?
Well, they shouldn't be. I'm so easy.
Are you easy?
I don't go. I try to avoid fancy restaurants. When I'm back in New York, I look for places where they just don't care who I am, wouldn't know me in any case. And even if they did, they wouldn't care. I go to like Korean barbecue, yakitori. I don't want extra courses. Uh-huh. I don't want special attention. I really don't want to be comped.
Yeah.
If they comp
you, do you pay?
I can't go back. I insist.
You insist. Yeah.
And if they fight back, and that's happened, I just don't go back.
Right.
It makes it a completely uncomfortable situation. If you comp me once, what if I really like your restaurant and I come back? They think, well, he's back because he gets comped here.
There's cheap
Anthony
Bourdain.
He's
going to
want to be comped again. Look at that, you know, cheap bastard. So it's super awkward for me. So chances are I won't go back.
Yeah. You travel around the world eating many different foods. Mm-hmm. Have you built up a tough stomach over the years? Did you always
I think
have
everybody
it?
On the crew has got a really good resistance. Uh-huh. You know, other than a little extra time on the Thunder Bucket, it's all good.
Do you travel with a lot of Imodium? Do you travel with...
I mean, it's always good to have something like that if you're eating in the places we are. But generally speaking, if we stick to local food, street food, we're good. Mm-hmm. People on the crew who've gotten really, really ill, it's always like the breakfast buffet at the major chain hotel.
Oh, is that dangerous?
Yeah. Or you know, the idiot who, you know, you're sitting in the middle of like Kurdistan and they're like, I'll have the, you know, I'll have the Italian seafood pasta, you know, or, you know, I'll have a Caesar salad. You know, you're in Liberia, dude. You know, do you really think that it's like, you know, Caesar salad is the specialty here?
No.
You know, or the bolognese at the pasta bar in, you know, Indonesia. That this is probably you should eat what the locals eat, and your chances are you'll be okay.
Oh, that's a tip. Eat what the locals eat, and that'll be safer than maybe the more familiar foods that you know.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
You know, also, you know, it's a bad business model for a local business person to be poisoning their neighbors, you know?
That's right.
Their neighbors
that's
are presumably
right.
going to still be there tomorrow, whereas you're going to be on the plane tomorrow.
Oh, that's you're out the door.
You know, the people at the hotel breakfast buffet, you know, they're thinking, look, you know, maybe it's a little old, but, you know, this guy's going to be on the plane back home when he explodes, you know, like a bottle rocket. So, you know, what do I care?
I also wanted to ask you about how you see food as political. That's super interesting to me.
Well, people who say to me, you know, stick to food, man, go flip a burger. There's nothing more political than food. I mean, it's a sort of absurd notion. You know, who eats, who doesn't eat, what we eat. You know, there are reasons for cultures that eat a certain way. They've been reacting to, you know, political realities, military realities more often than not. So, you know, just an idiotic, you know, like, you know, because I worked in the restaurant business for 30 years, I'm not entitled to an opinion.
Right.
You know?
There is an interesting thing. Actors say the same thing, too. It's like, yeah, I'm an actor primarily, but I can also have an opinion and speak out about what's
I understand
going
that
on.
Completely.
Yeah.
No. It's like, I mean, I understand the reaction. You know, you see somebody who lives in what you see anyway and perceive to be some Hollywood bubble.
Right.
You know, with nothing more to worry about than, you know, a cappuccino or a frappuccino.
Uh-huh.
It's hard, you know, for somebody who just got laid off at the coal mine to hear. You know, to get lectured by Barbara Streisand. You know,
sure, I get that. Yeah.
I understand that sort of instinctive hostility, and I mean, I try to be sensitive to it.
Right.
But you know, when we're talking about food, and you know, I have been traveling for 18 years. I don't live in Hollywood.
Yeah.
I don't know if that gets me off the hook, but I mean, I do understand that.
Yeah. Final question. Can you just tell us a little bit about your fantastic dinner with President Obama? It's really amazing. Television seems like an incredible meal. What was that? How did you set that up? What was it like eating with him?
The White House reached out to us about a year earlier, and we were looking for a place that would be cool to go with the president.
Yeah.
And when we heard it was this information was held very tightly. The network didn't know. Mm-hmm. My camera guys didn't know. No one knew.
Up to the point of him walking in?
Just about.
Wow.
Yeah. But when I heard they were going to Vietnam as part of a tour swing through Southeast Asia, I thought, oh, perfect. We have a lot of friends there. But I said, look, let's do it right.
Yeah.
Let's write. I know a perfect little space.
No Hilton breakfast buffet.
Yeah, no banquet room at a hotel, which, you know, makes the Secret Service very uncomfortable. When you take the president to, you know, the second floor of a not particularly clean, family-run restaurant, cheap as hell, serving local noodles, you know, one exit and entrance, you know, that's it, tiny, narrow streets. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, eating basically mystery meat out of a bowl of room temperature broth. But I will tell you, President Obama... No room in the room for the Secret Service. I've never seen a man happier to sit on a low plastic stool.
I'm sure he's thrilled.
And drink beer from the bottle. He was completely chill and kind to my crew, and gracious.
Yeah.
These are qualities we almost forget.
That's right. You don't hear the word gracious
anymore.
The diners must have been losing their mind. The other people at the restaurant must have been.
They were. The restaurant had no idea who was coming.
Really?
I mean, until he walked in.
Wow.
And the young people in particular in Vietnam were absolutely loved.
Of course.
Street just Obama, man. But they were cool till the end of the meal. Then they all, because they were told, try to act normally.
You guys, we have a special guest.
We said to everybody, look, try to act normal. You know, just hang on, you know, hold on to your shit till the end of the scene. And they did. They really did, because the other customers did the right thing. But as soon as, and actually, President Obama really put everybody at ease. All of us felt like very comfortable during the whole scene and the next day. It's afterwards, after he leaves, you're all like, did that happen?
Yeah.
You know, the president, I just like ate noodles for an hour and drank beer with the president. And he was like really cool.
It's amazing. Well, it was great television. And I honestly mean this. Your shows are so fantastic. I've been such a big fan.
Thank you.
Wasted's a great documentary that's available now. And it was such a pleasure having you here. Thank you so much. And safe travels. I know you're heading on the road again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
Be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, 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 where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.